Good morning, everyone. Sunday, May 10th, 2015. Our subject, Adam and Fallen Man. And the golden text is from Matthew. Be therefore perfect, even as your Father, which is in heaven, is perfect. Christ Jesus. And I'd like Linda, in regard to that, to read our the watching point that was on our homepage this week, number 31.
Watch lest you feel that man is the master of divine power rather than its servant. False theology declares that Jesus was equipped with deific power, that he wielded it to perform miracles as he chose. On page 119 of Science and Health, Mrs. Eddy writes that man is but the humble servant of the restful mind. When she went forth on the lecture platform, she prayed, Now, dear God, here I am. Use me. I am absent from the body and present with thee in consciousness. Love uses me in its own good way. I would lift myself right out of the material sense of self and audience and let God use me. You must feel that divine power is using you. You must kneel in humility at the throne of God, asking and seeking to be imbued with deific power. Then you can go forth and exercise that power with authority. But you ask, is not this using divine power? Yes, but only as a servant who goes forth to do his master's bidding. Jesus might have been called master because above all others, he permitted divine power to master him.
Thank you. How does that relate to this golden text?
Our perfection is a reflection. It's not us being perfect. It's something that already exists in God, and then we, as his expression, have, you know, reflect that.
Thank you.
Very good. And what does it mean to be perfect? What does it mean to you?
I know frequently when I've seen this command, be ye therefore perfect, I thought, whoa, that's a huge, huge assignment. Perfect? I've been trying to be perfect all, well, whatever. For me, it means to have your heart perfect with God. Because, like it said in that watching point, and I wanted to say thank you, Linda, that was a wonderful choice for a watching point to put on there. Because we're not the master. We're not the ones who's making ourselves perfect. It's perfection itself that works through us. And another thing that I thought that watching point was so helpful for, because it answers, I think, sometimes a lot of criticism of Christian Science. You might say, well, if you're a Christian Scientist, do such and such. I'm so sorry. I'm not the master of divine power. I don't master it. It masters me. If I let it.
Thank you.
Yeah. For me, I mean, the idea of being perfect is a matter of being as pure a heart as I can, being as humble and receptive as I can. It means cleaning the window pane. There's of materialism, of pride, all the imperfection that the human mind would, you know, would try to lay on you.
Yeah, this is an important point to understand. Otherwise, you know, we hear about perfectionists, people who are trying so hard to be perfect in everything. And when you humanly try that, and I know I once tried too, it's exhausting. You can't do it. It's just endless. It's just all human effort, and there's no God in it. It blesses no one.
And those who try to be humanly perfect get really annoyed at people who aren't.
Well, that's true, too.
But it sees limitation instead of seeing God's perfect child in others and in themselves, actually.
So you're only perfect as your Father in heaven is perfect, as you reflect him. And as you do that, it won't be this driven sense. It'll just be something natural that flows from you, from the Father. And it will be true, probably, the things around you will get better in every way. You know, Mrs. Eddy, if you read, and you all should be, either have read it or will be reading, Mrs. Mary Baker Eddy, her spiritual footsteps, as well as precepts, but her footsteps tell how ordered her home was. She knew where everything was. It wasn't just a big chaotic mess. It was very orderly. She had to have it that way in order to accomplish the work that she accomplished. But it was also reflection of divine mind. It's the beauty of holiness. The beauty of holiness is ordered, beautiful. I mean, look, we were marveling today when we came into church. We have this beautiful flowering cherry tree, and half its blossoms are on the grass, just a bed of pink blossoms, as well as some still in her beautiful nest of hair, I'll say. It's just so beautiful. That's God's beauty, and it's natural and easy, not stressed and working out at the gym 24 hours a day and, you know, getting Botox and all of this stuff to try to be perfectly beautiful or perfectly whatever it is you're trying to achieve. It's God's beauty, God's orderliness. I mean, look at the universe, how beautiful it is. It is a reflection of this divine mind. So always think of this, imbibe this perfectness. And someone once told me, too, and I thought this was helpful, maybe it was you, Shannon. But anyway, before they do proofing or anything, you know, they know that because they're expressing, they pray, because they're expressing the perfection of God, they will see anything that's out of order, anything that's not right. It will become, you know, just pop out of the page. When you're in that state of mind, you'll see it. If you're either drowsy or full of the cares of the day, perhaps you won't see it. So clear your thought and ask God for his help and guidance in everything you do, and you will find that perfection being expressed more and more in your life, in every instance, in every detail, the beauty of holiness. Anyone else?
That's such a beautiful thought and watch, because it just takes the burden off of one, you know? It's just being and looking to God and not putting my, you know, human will into it.
Thank you. And when you're trying to be perfect, you get so wrapped up into it, you go into the human mind. There's no God in it, and it's the exact opposite of what it should be. Yeah, absolutely. And I love that from Science and Health, and I say it to myself often, that man is but the humble servant of the restful mind. When you get all wound up in something, stop and think of that. You are but the humble servant of the restful mind. No churning and running and pressure. The stately goings of mind.
And I'm sure that's what Jesus meant when he said that my yoke is easy and my burden is light.
Yes, it's a false sense of self and thinking that we're doing it that gets you so wound up. I saw on the forum this morning, I forget what the topic was, but Florence wrote to it, and then Suzanne, you know, a list of things that help them, to keep them. Do you remember yours, Florence?
I'm not sure which one. I wrote a couple of...
Yeah, you wrote a list, and then is Susanna? Oh,
yeah, the list of quotes. I remember one that Suzanne wrote was, I and my Father are one. The Father that worketh in me, he doeth the work.
That dwelleth in me.
Dwelleth in.
And the Father has not left alone.
I have it here if you want me to read it.
Okay, go ahead, Linda.
Okay, she said, my hand is in his hand. I keep my thought on my unity with God. I couldn't be separated from him if I wanted to. I am his reflection now.
That was Florence. Thank you.
Yeah.
And then Suzanne?
Sure. Do you want me to read her whole post?
Go ahead.
Okay. This is such an awesome statement. She's referring to the relations of God and man, divine principle and idea are indestructible in science, and science knows no lapse from nor return to harmony, but holds the divine order or spiritual law in which God and all he creates are perfect and eternal, who have remained unchanged in its eternal history. Then Suzanne adds, this is so uplifting to contemplate. Instead of identifying with fallen man and all the vicissitudes of the human arena, I can know that my relationship with God is indestructible through eternity. That to me is the secret place of the Most High of the 91st Psalm, a place I can always find refuge, comfort, and true identity. Oh, she had it. Oh, I see. There was a second part. I didn't notice she added
okay,
more.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. That's okay. Go ahead.
She did do, I and my Father are one. The Father that is in me, he doeth the works. The Father hath not left me alone. God is closer to me than the air that I breathe. I walk with love along the way, and oh, it is a holy day. No more I suffer cruel fear. I feel God's presence with me here. That was it.
Thank
you. Her list.
That was from a hymn. So all of those things, you know, this is how you speak to yourself during the day. As we've talked about, you be your best friend, and you speak to yourself in this. If you feel yourself getting wound up or believing all of the mortal mind nonsense that's paraded in front of our eyes constantly, get back to the truth and feel God's presence and power. Become that humble servant of the restful mind. And you will find this perfection growing in you in every way. And that includes, you know, perfect health, perfect relationships, perfect joy, the perfect love that casteth out fear.
And a peace, perfect peace, that you can't get any other way.
It passeth all understanding, but it all generates from God. That is the main thing. You cannot do it humanly. It is God. Okay, and then just a few things I still want to touch on in the lesson. We did have a wonderful Bible study yesterday. Thank you, Tom. I also wanted to say, too, that the watching point gets changed every week. It is good, if you have time, to read it each week, the new one. I think Linda posts it on Sunday or Monday.
Sunday night is the goal.
Sunday night, yep. Okay. And think about it and work with it. These are messages. And if we all work together in unity on it, all the better. And the articles, too. We try to pick out the really comforting, good, and or instructive articles that will help you. And read them. I know Zari, she takes her computer to work. She reads them on the bus, train, or whatever she's on in the morning. So it's good to have these truths to refresh your mind, the renewing of your mind. And thank you, Linda, for doing that. Then in the responsive reading, I just wanted to mention verse 15. Day-Day, would you read that? Do you have it available? Romans 8:15. Oh, one second. I don't have it in front of me. Okay. The responsive reading.
Okay. And which line was it?
It's a verse 15.
For ye have not received the spirit of bondage again to fear, but ye have received the spirit of adoption, whereby we call Abba, Father.
Yes. So what does that mean? I know so many of you struggle with fear. I have. And this is instructions, and actually Fairley spoke to it in the Bible study yesterday.
Well, God doesn't really know anything about fear. That's why we receive the spirit of adoption, because He is spirit. We are spirit also. We're spiritual.
Yes.
So when we return from fear, then we feel that spirit and we're able to demonstrate. And, you know, like you said, in everything we do during the day, whatever tasks we're doing, we turn to Him and everything becomes better and clearer for us. And then it becomes more natural when we do that, too. It's like breathing, in a way.
Yes, it's His reflection. He's certainly not fearful, therefore we shouldn't. It's over and over again in the Bible, fear not, and God has not given you the spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. And a interpretation of that last one is a disciplined mind, which means your thoughts aren't going all over the place. They're reined in. Well, and I think to me the point of this verse is the idea of seeing God as a loving Father. Fairley mentioned yesterday, you know, she would cry out, Father. If something, you know, scary happens, you can just say the word Father. Your Heavenly Father is with you. Jesus stilled the storm knowing that. His disciples were terrified, but He wasn't. I heard last night, we have a couple of members in Texas who were on the path of a bad tornado storm. I got text right before, it was actually right before our watch, and it passed over. No harm done there. Cry out to your Father. Some people, you know, talk about God being divine consciousness, and certainly there are many different names for God, and if that's helpful to you, then say divine consciousness. To me, that was always a little abstract. I prefer Father. Jesus called Him Father. That's good enough for me.
Yeah, and think about what your inheritance is from your Father. I mean, we actually inherit things from our Father. Since God is our Father, are we going to inherit anything that would be fearful, causes distress? No, that's not what we inherit from God, from our Father. So claim your rightful inheritance.
I was going to say, just like parents that want to adopt a child so they could love him, so our Heavenly Father is waiting for us to be receptive to this idea that He has indeed adopted us in this sense, that has loved us. So puts everything in the right perspective, that a good, a loving Father.
Yeah, there's a story Mrs. Evans used to tell about a prince, you know, someone born to a king and a queen, a prince, but they were stolen. He was stolen by gypsies and taken away, and didn't know that he was the son of the king. And then one day, you know, they found him, the king and his wife found him and brought him back to this palace, actually, and he discovered that all good was his by inheritance, and that this other life he'd been leading with the gypsies out in the woods was not the truth about him. And of course that likens to us, our experience here. You are the son or the daughter of the king. Never forget that. Remember who and what you are is God's child. Now in order to receive His blessings, of course, you need to obey Him. That's a different story. You can't be disobedient and you still are the son or the daughter of the king, but you're not going to inherit all the good that he has for you if you're living in disobedience to him. So, any more on that?
Well, it reminds me of the prodigal son because, you know, he willingly left and was living riotously, and then he realized what was happening. He was receptive and went back to his father, and then everything went well for him.
That's right. And the father met him with great love, no condemnation, no, well, what were you doing, or why did you leave home, or you stupid idiot?
No. Just welcome back.
Yes, and that is how we must be to all others and to ourselves as well. We've taken a spin off the straight and narrow. That's okay. Glad you're back on again. Nothing but love. We drop all of that. It wasn't the truth in the first place. You don't carry it around with you. And then, what did you want to say?
Well, I was going to say, that's such an important point. Because each one of us gets to that point at least once in our life where we realize the depravity of mortal existence, the depravity of the Adam dream. And it's important to really get to where you see the depravity so clearly that you don't want anything to do with it. And at that point, don't condemn yourself for having been there. But be grateful that you do have a loving father that welcomes you back. Feel it's important to feel God's love. So many people go through life and it seems like they just can't feel the love of God. Because he's right here with each one of us.
Thanks, Gary. I think it's so important that here and so-called that God is here. I mean, because otherwise I used to feel when there was a challenge, then I would start my praying off with I'm not perfect, you know, something wrong with me, now I'm striving to be perfect. I think what broke it is to see that even in trouble, the truth is that this is not true about me. I don't know if I'm expressing it well, but that, I guess that's why he says the basis of demonstration is perfect God, perfect man. We've got to start with the knowledge, even though, or the understanding that we are perfect right now.
Yes, and what you said at the beginning, Lawrence, is so important to remember, because if I'm not reflecting God, I am worthless. I am imperfect without God. But with God, all things are possible.
So if you don't feel God's love, then you start working on it. And one of the best ways is to start thanking God for your blessings, for, Mrs. Eddy says, for life, truth, and love. But see all the good that's in your life and be grateful and see the source in God. That's the start to it. And then you practice the presence, as they say. You work on it during the day. Don't rush around and not feel he's with you. Think about it. You're always thinking something. Why not think about that? This is why I thought this morning I felt so happy. We're going to spend an hour talking about our best friend, God. And isn't that great? So that's what he is, your best and ever friend. Then also in the lesson, in Genesis 1, it talks about God making man in his image and likeness and giving them dominion over all things, over every creeping thing that creepeth upon the earth. And I wanted to address this. It was addressed a little bit Wednesday night, but this belief of allergies. You've been given dominion over every little creeping thing on the earth. You've been given dominion over allergies. And don't let any belief or any doctor or anything else tell you otherwise. It's a lie. It's not true. But we really have to stand up to it, because lately the allergy is one of the Parisian garments that everyone hastens to get, as Mrs. Eddy says in Science and Health. Every little thing, if they don't know what it is, if you go to a doctor, so I hear, well, you've got an allergy. No. God saw everything that he made, and behold, it was very good. And as Sharon said, what did you say in your testimony?
One idea of God cannot harm another idea of God.
Right. And Shardy read a quote in Science and Health about it's profane to think that new mown hay or grass could bother you, or a beautiful rosebud. Don't stand for that. It's a belief, and you don't have to have it. Years ago, someone that I worked with said a doctor had told her that an allergy is an unnatural reaction to a harmless substance. So think about that. And often I find, too, in working with that or people with this problem, very often they are reacting or annoyed at things, perhaps, and they're not noticing, you know, their annoyances. And so then they're annoyed with one more thing, the stupid pollen or whatever they think. So watch it. Don't be annoyed. Love God's creation. And remember, it's an unnatural reaction to a harmless substance. I thought that was a great quote. Anybody else? Anybody else on the lesson?
Well, I just think I am so grateful to Mrs. Eddy for pointing out the falsity of Genesis 2. Because after Genesis 1 lays out so clearly God's creation and the perfection of God's creation and the completeness of God's creation, then in Genesis 2, verse 6, it says, but, as if there was anything missing, or as if there was anything wrong. But there went up a mist from the earth.
I find it very helpful when I've talked to a couple of Episcopalians who seemed interested in what I was doing, though they were Episcopalians. But my first thing to suggest to them is to read Mrs. Eddy's chapter, Genesis.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
Because that, in the Episcopal Church, they do have the funeral service mentions immortal life, but it also says we're human and go back to dust.
Whoops.
Well, see, and that's the mist.
They're confused.
That's the confusion that comes with the belief that there is life, truth, intelligence, or substance in matter. The
sure.
Earth. The earth.
Well, that's a basic way to get people started if they read Genesis. And, you know, if they're people who have studied the Bible a little bit.
Yeah. Well, and we are so grateful to Mrs. Eddy because she's only one who explains it so clearly. Otherwise, it is confusion. How can you understand any of this? She makes it so clear and logical, as it should be. So, yeah, that wonderful dominion and the mist, that's a very important verse in there. So if you feel a mist coming up or a cloudiness, then you get rid of it. Clear your thoughts. Keep yourself in that secret place of the Most High. You don't have to go into that Adam dream thinking. Like Janet was saying, the prodigal son, he left the father's house. He wasn't pushed out or shoved out. He left it. Don't leave it. You don't have to leave it. And then maybe one other thing I just wanted to say. It brings out in Science and Health more than once that God fashions all things after his own likeness. Man is the true image of God. Do you think of yourself as the image of God? What does that mean to you? Think about it. When you look in the mirror, what do you see? You should have love towards yourself. You should have knowing you are that image and likeness of God. That's how He created you. Said over and over and over again. Think about it. Think on the enduring the good and the true. Rather than think about whatever, all the wrinkles you have or whatever else. Think, no, on the image and likeness of God. What does that mean? Think about that. I bet it'll change a lot in your life. Anybody else on the lesson?
Well, Art? I just want to...
Okay, go ahead.
No, she can go first if she has something to add.
No, I was just going to ask her, but go, you go ahead.
Okay, well, I just want to quickly say I really appreciated this lesson. It was like a treatment for me, addressing Adam and fallen man. And I think one of the things I realized, the misconceptions I was raised with in the culture, was that if you didn't believe in the Adam story, then you had no problems with this Adam dream thing. When that was a very huge misconception and upside down view of the what the Adam dream belief is. And I'm really grateful for the teachings at Plainfield. I mean, even when you refer to the Adam dream, that's very clarifying.
Good.
Yeah, because the Adam dream is law. It, humanly, it's what people believe is true. It's what most people believe is true. That there is life, truth, intelligence, and substance in matter. Most people believe it. They take it as a given.
And that there's birth and death.
Yeah.
And you're a sinner.
That's the premise that most people start out with. And it's all wrong. And our job is to lift them out of that bondage.
And our right thinking and our right knowing does. Every right thought you think purifies the atmosphere. That's why the wrong thoughts you think, you're not just hurting yourself, you're polluting the atmosphere. So, don't do that. Think of what's true and real and right. And just as the snow gently falls, each flake is important, purifies and whitens the landscape.
So this is, as you said, Linda, this is an aggressive belief, and it has to be handled every day.
And what a horrible thing to then believe that if you don't believe in the story, you've handled it. And that's not even... nothing. That's almost dangerous, actually. It is dangerous.
Well, it is. See, this is the idea of avoiding or ignoring rather than handling. It's just pushing it under the carpet, and it's there all the time. Breeding awful things.
Yes.
Absolutely. Yeah, and the fact is, if you're not sufficiently handling a belief, it will handle you. Hmm. And that is what is going on in the culture. People are not adequately or correctly handling these false beliefs. So they're being handled by it. And that's what will happen to me. That's the danger for each one of us. We've got to be alert.
And that's why here we know there is no fear, because there's only fear when you don't handle it. When you handle it, it's gone. You've done it. It's over. But when you don't handle it, it just grows. Go ahead.
That's why when I was... I came away from Christian Science right after Sunday school, and it was like, well, gee, it made me think of, well, gee, if I'm the perfect child of God, then how come I'm always feeling so guilty? And that goes into not handling that whole belief.
Absolutely. Very good. Thank you. Absolutely, yes. You've got to get in there and deal with these things and then go forward. And this is why we have the lesson over and over and over again. Twice a year we have it. And I'm always amazed, like yesterday, the Bible study was so fresh and new and different. Doesn't matter how often we talk about it, there's always something new. These books, remember, they are textbooks. Textbooks. You were going to school and you had a textbook. You would study it. You would write in it. You would make notes. Your books should be well used. Science and Health, Prose Works, and your Bible.
And then you take a test. Our test happens to be, how are you living your life today?
Yep, you can ask yourself that before you go to bed. And if you weren't doing so well, well, clear your slate and vow to do better tomorrow. Okay, I think we should go to fallibility of human concept. Oh, I'm sorry.
One last something. The belief of the human birth, I think, is one of the most difficult to get away from. And indeed, we have days to even emphasize it more. So that's one thing. You know, Mother's Day, Father's Day, it kind of makes it really, I think that is the truth.
Thank you.
You've mentioned it.
That's a good point. We have to handle the false beliefs about holidays, and Mother's Day is one of the worst. You're right.
My parents, when that was invented, you know, my parents had no use for it way back then because they said this is just a commercial thing.
Well, and it's true. It basically that is. You have a mother on this earth, you should be loving her every day, not just one day. It is. But it's the aggressive belief you're born into matter and you're going to die out of it, and also the belief of pride or shame. Look at my wonderful children. Look at my terrible children. Look at my beautiful mother. Look at my ugly mother. I don't know. You just go on and on. It's just all hogwash, okay? So God is your father, mother, and your ancestry is the beautiful, the good, and the pure. And just stay with that. Keep with that today. That's the truth, and rejoice in that. Don't go down into the muck of this Mother's Day stuff. Or even, you know, they're a mother, I'm not a mother. She's got 10 kids, I've got one kid. It goes on and on and on. it's just silliness. Just be glad that God created you and everyone. Thank you for bringing
it. Causes a lot of resentment, too.
Oh, yeah. Resentment, or if somebody didn't remember you, or you're...
Or maybe they resent having to do something for the mother.
right. Oh, yeah.
There was, on Friday night, we were out, and I've never heard so much aggressive honking at people. You know, and it came to me that I thought these people were probably being wound up about the upcoming Mother's Day.
Getting
anxious. I don't.
That could be. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. They're all out buying their flowers or whatever to do. And then feeling, you know, crying because your mother's not here, or crying.
Yeah, that's true.
All of this stuff. Just flush it.
And this time you can really tell this, because this weekend I've seen that all the produce stores have, like, cleared their areas of produce, and they're filled and stocked full of flowers. Flowers everywhere, sidewalks. And
there you go. So, I mean, we certainly, if we have an earthly mother we love, we respect her, we honor thy father and thy mother. I'm not in any way diminishing that, but I am saying stay clear of all the human stuff that goes along with it. And as Fairly said, and his parents were right years ago, mainly it is commercial. You know, all the restaurants are full, the flowers business, the card business, they're doing a wonderful job.
It actually started as a day of mothers going out and serving their community, believe it or not.
Well, that's a good thing.
Yeah, that's what the original purpose was.
Well, that's good. That's a better purpose. That's the unselfed purpose.
Isn't it interesting how so many things start out with a good purpose and then get perverted over time?
Yeah,
that's danger. Most things do start out well, and then the human mind gets in. I liked what Mrs. Eddy said. Love, the divine principle, is the father and mother of the universe. I thought that just wiped out Mother's Day. Certainly does.
The human belief.
Yes. Yes, so we rejoice in that. 352, Miscellaneous Writings. Okay, the third paragraph, starting with line 14, I have any volunteers, anyone who's ready to read that paragraph for us? Maybe someone who hasn't spoken yet or spoken much?
I'll read it.
Thank you.
It starts with in science, right?
Yes, it does.
Okay. In science, sickness is healed upon the same principle and by the same rule that sin is healed. To know the supposed bodily belief of the patient and what is claimed to produce it enables the practitioner to act more understandingly in destroying this belief. Thus it is in healing the moral sickness, the malicious mental operation must be understood in order to enable one to destroy it and its effects. There is not sufficient spiritual power in the human thought to heal the sick or the sinful. Through the divine energies alone, one must either get out of himself and into God, so far that his consciousness is the reflection of the divine, or he must, through argument and the human consciousness of both evil and good, overcome evil.
Thank you, Suzanne. Anyone want to comment on that? Florence, what do you want to say? Or anyone?
I was thinking this went right back to the lesson. Through the divine energies alone, one must either get out of himself and into God, so far as his consciousness is the reflection of the divine.
That is a wonderful statement. That was one Mrs. Evans loved. And many of these I'm going to give to you because we were taught to memorize these, or certainly at least to mark them and star them in your book so you don't forget. She's saying there's not sufficient spiritual power in the human thought. You're not going to do it humanly. You've got to get yourself out of the way, and as much as you can, that's what heals. She knew she never healed anyone. Jesus knew that. That I can of mine own self do nothing. God that heals, only God. And if you're not there, then she says, well, then you've got to do a little arguing to get yourself there, tuning the violin. Hopefully you keep your violin tuned pretty well during the day so you aren't down in the dumps. If you're down in the dumps and somebody needs help, you'll probably burst into tears yourself. So keep your violin tuned so you can be of help to others. But that last sentence is powerful. Know it. Work with it. Love it. What, Florence?
Oh, that was Day-Day. I was just going to say that that sentence just made me think of therapy. I think that's become so popular for people to go to therapists, and a lot of times it's just going back over and over and over and over and seeming, you know, to get over the problem, and then they have it again and they go back to the therapist. And I'm just grateful that we're learning that the answer to everything is in God, and everyone can you know God and be healed, but it's just getting to that point where you realize that this material process is not working.
Thank you. That's wonderful.
Yeah, the one good thing, if there is any good thing about therapy, is that it encourages you to sort of get things out in the open.
Yeah.
However, since it is human, it can't heal.
No, and if that's all it is, and that's where it leaves you, then sometimes you're just almost worse. You're just going around and around with all this error that you've just been exposing and talking about, and some people can't seem to stop talking about it. You've got to just bring it up to the light for the light to heal it, and then move on quickly.
Yeah, I think that's why of course, I started off with argument, and often do, because that brings me to the point of consciousness, my thought being clear, and then, you know, moving stuff out of the way, as it did last week in the
readings about unself-love, receiving the divine power.
Yes.
Unless that is happening, I mean, the human mind is just doesn't do it.
Thank you. In that sentence, Mrs. Eddy says, to know the supposed bodily belief of the patient and what has claimed to produce it enables the practitioner to act more understandingly in destroying this belief. The supposed bodily belief, she's not giving it any power with that one. And then, and what is claimed to produce it, it hasn't really produced it, it's just claimed to produce it. So if you have some problem, you know, that maybe it's because you've been hating and hating and hating for so many years, well, she's just annulling that whole thing. It's only a supposed bodily belief, and what claimed to produce it's not true either. It's all mortal mind. It's all the Adam dream. And remember, the hate, if you think, you know, if you've discovered, oh, well, you've been hating your ex-husband for 20 years and now you don't feel so well, well, remember, the hate is not true, never was true. It's no more real than the not feeling well problem is. All a belief, not the truth, about God's man. Because sometimes, you know, people think, well, the hate was really real or something. And the hate's not real either. Nothing's real. Not real. God never said it. And we have to be strong there. It's okay to uncover the fact you were hating, only to realize it's unreality. And that, in fact, you are the image of love. And that you're not some bitter mortal, but God's child who knows how to forgive and to love himself and others, or love others as himself. Is that clear to everyone?
I think Bigfo Young said something about there is no, the belief is not real, and there is no believer also that is real. So.
Yes, very good. Belief. And if it has no believer, it is nothing. So don't ever be the believer. Anyone else on that paragraph?
Yep. I just wanted to say that the watching point, again, this week really relates to this paragraph when it said that you must feel that divine power is using you. So I think part of, a big part of conventional Christianity or old theology is that we are totally helpless. We are thrown onto the earth. We're sinners, and, you know, we're just here, and you better hope for the best. And, you know, it's always talk about hope, hope, hope. And that this just turns it on its head and says through the divine energies alone, and you must feel that divine power is using you. That's in the watching point. So we have to step up to the plate and claim our power as a reflection of the divine power. And it's really radical. I mean, it's what allows us to be children of God and Christian Scientists and helping our neighbor and to follow in Jesus' footsteps. Otherwise, we don't have a chance.
That's absolutely right. Thank you. So again, mark that last sentence, circle it, star it, live with it, make it yours, think about it. It's a wonderful truth. This book is filled with gems, as is Science and Health, as is the Bible. So I'm going to give you another gem now. And this is one Mrs. Evans used to say it was her father's favorite page in the whole book of prose work. It's in Unity of Good, and it's on page 20, called Rectification. Think about it. Star this and live with it during the week. How is a mistake to be rectified? By reversal or revision? By seeing it in its proper light, and then turning it or turning from it. We undo the statements of error by reversing them. Through these three statements or misstatements, evil comes into authority. First,
the Lord created it. Second, the Lord knows it. Third, I am afraid of it. By a reverse process of argument, evil must be dethroned. First, God never made evil. Second, he knows it not. Third, we therefore need not fear it. Try this process, dear inquirer, and so reach that perfect love which casteth out fear. And then see if this love does not destroy in you all hate and the sense of evil. You will awake to the perception of God as all in all. You will find yourself losing the knowledge and the operation of sin, proportionably as you realize the divine infinitude and believe that he can see nothing outside of his own focal distance. Thank you all. We'll go on and have a good, powerful service to bless all mankind.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.